I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Real Wright Brothers have just released the second of their USNA series of graphic novels. One of the members of the syndicate, Alan Stanley, joins me now. I'll get him to tell us about the United States of North America series, which takes place in a time in the future where Canada and the United States amalgamate. I'll get Mr. Stanley to take us to this new country and tell us about the challenges faced by the people in this new country. The what-ifs are fascinating. Alan Stanley has had a career in the film industry as a writer and producer. He has produced live events throughout Metro Vancouver and was a voice on and the producer and writer of the podcast No Shirt, No Shirt, No Shoes, Pants Optional. The website for more is at usna.ca. There will be appearances at the Calgary Fan Expo at the end of April, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival in mid-May, and the Vancouver Comic Arts Festival the 21st and the 22nd of May. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Alan Stanley. Mr. Stanley, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So your colleagues, David Longworth and Harry Kalinske. Yeah, so the three of you make up the Real Wright Brothers, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, when was it that you guys first met?
Well, that's a good question. I first met David Longworth in the 1980s sometime, and I'm not exactly sure when. And I was just writing scripts, and I was looking for somebody to help me get my scripts to producers of film and television. And I had heard about David Longworth, who was an actor and had good connections. And when we met, we just clicked, and he said, well, let's do some writing together. And in fact, the seed of the idea of USNA came from David. And Harry Kalinske, we had both known, and we ran into him one day, actually, in a mall downtown, and we were just chatting and thought, gee, we should all work together because we enjoyed spending our time together, and we seemed to have complementary ideas. So that's kind of how we all met, and it's worked out really well since then.
Yeah, and so you guys have done USNA together. Have you worked on other projects together?
Yeah, well, we've written together, I think, 6 or 7 different screenplays, and we've worked with producers on polishing scripts and that kind of thing. We have one animated film that was produced. It was some Russian animation that was brought to us by the producers, and they needed an English script, and it's called The Adventures of Mowgli, and it was it's been shown on YTV and HBO. Mm-hmm. And then we have Caretakers, which is another graphic novel series based on one of our screenplays that we're also publishing. And it's different than USNA because it's a comedy, it's got kids and ghosts, and it's quite a lighthearted, fun kind of thing, where USNA is a little more serious, being a little more politically and also action-oriented.
Yeah, so in terms of how USNA came about, was there... I guess I'm curious to know what you guys, mm-hmm. what the three of you, were thinking in terms of the state of the world, if you will, as you were creating this series.
Yeah, it's interesting because we first began writing the screenplay over 25 years ago, and at the time we were projecting that Ronald Reagan was in power and there was things going on in Central America, which were not particularly kosher in terms of sending troops down surreptitiously and supporting the dictators down there. And so we were projecting kind of a more right-wing, Pentagon-oriented, almost 1984-ish kind of world in this future where the people of North America are combined, but the people of Canada decided to join it because they were mostly bought out, where there was a big cash advance to every citizen in Canada in order to join the United States to become the United States of North America. So that's kind of the world that we imagined way back then, and a lot of that has come true in terms of the political the little more right-wing, mm-hmm. Things that are going on in the States now.
I guess nobody could have predicted Trump, though, could they?
No. It's nobody expected that the clown car would show up at this time, but we don't have a Trump character in the stories, and I'm not sure we're going to add one either.
So tell us about the characters that are in USNA and just where they come from and I guess what they're feeling at this time that this series starts.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first book that we did is called USNA, the United States of North America, and the characters that we introduced are the basic people who are involved both in the rebellion and on the other side of the ledger, which would be the people running the country and also the people involved in trying to fight this growing rebellion. So the rebels are led by a guy named Samuel Stern, who is a former Prime Minister of Canada who was exiled when the two countries first amalgamated. And Stern, we were thinking of Pierre Elliott Trudeau when we were imagining the Samuel Stern character. So he's kind of flamboyant. He wears a cape like Trudeau did. And Trudeau used to have, I think, I'm not sure if it was roses or carnations.
Roses, yeah.
Yeah, so we used the idea of the rose as the symbol of the rebel movement. And Samuel Stern, before he became the Prime Minister of Canada, was a lecturer and a teacher at McGill University in Montreal. Mm. And some of his students, one of them, Emmett O'Brien, became an assistant to him and then an assistant through the political process and in the Prime Minister's office. And he's one of the lead strategic and heads of the rebellion at the moment. And when we begin the story, nobody really knows where Emmett O'Brien is. And also, there was a guy named Jean-Claude Boisvert, who was at McGill and part of Samuel Stern's kind of entourage. And he's also part of the rebellion. And there was a guy named Conrad, who was very jealous of Emmett O'Brien, and he was part of this, but he used to do things at McGill to try to undermine Emmett O'Brien's status as a student and a student leader, and he ended up getting kicked out of McGill and went into the military after that, and he became part of the government of the United States of North America in that he's now a leader of the war down in Central America. So one of the things that we projected, because when we first wrote the book and it was the Reagan era and there was wars going down on in Central America, we imagined what we called the CENTAM War, similar to the Vietnam War. Mm. And so Conrad has been sent down to the CENTAM Wars to lead the movement down there. And this is kind of drug war related and suppression of the people, that kind of thing. So he's a very ruthless military guy. And when the rebellion is erupting in North America, they bring Conrad back to North America to lead the anti-government forces. And the anti-government forces in the United States of North America are called SHADO, which is Strategic Home Alliance Defense Organization. And Conrad is the head of that. And then we have Carol Wheeler, and she's pretty much the central character that the story revolves around. So we really like strong female characters, and mm-hmm. Carol Wheeler is she's a Toronto corporate lawyer whose husband was once a senator in Canada, and he died under mysterious circumstances, but he was close to Samuel Stern, so she has a connection there, but isn't really interested or involved in the political stuff. She has a couple of sons. One of them was on what she thought might have been a camping trip, but he turns up in a city park, and he looks like he's been tasered or electrocuted or something, and she doesn't know anything about it. But it turns out that he was part of the rebel movement, and she didn't know that. And she takes her young son, Carter, on a road trip from Toronto to Calgary to visit her sister and to try to kind of figure out what's going on and how come her son died. And on the way, she becomes indoctrinated into the rebel movement because she meets rebels along the way, and she meets farmers who are losing their farms, because one of the things that happens in this new North America is that the family farm is disappearing and they're being replaced by prison farms and using prison labor to grow food and do stuff like that. So so part of the story is her transformation from being this kind of straight corporate lawyer to slowly learning about the rebellion and what it's all about, and essentially kind of almost backing into becoming part of it. And they all end up in Calgary. And so USNA, the first book, starts in Toronto and ends in Calgary, and so it's very Canadian in that way. When we move into the next book of the series, USNA 2, then the rebellion spreads and it goes to Chicago and St. Louis and San Francisco and also Halifax Harbor, and we introduce more characters at that point.
Yeah, and so do you envision a longer series as you guys continue?
Well, you know, we're actually surprised that it did continue, because when we first wrote the screenplay, it had a, not a cliffhanger ending, but it, you know, the story kind of hit a point where you would be satisfied that that was the end. And when we released or published USNA, we were getting a lot of feedback from people who had found the book and were reading it, and they were going, well, that's great, and we really like it, so what happens next? And so we thought, okay, what does happen next? And so we had to start to create the new story. So USNA 2, what we've done is, with graphic novels, because you have to get an artist, neither Davey nor Harry and I are artists in the sense that we could do the kind of quality art that would go into a graphic novel. So we hired a guy out of Calgary named Dave Casey to do the first book, and it took him over 3 years to draw over 200 pages of art. And because there was demand for more books, we wanted to get a book out every year, and so we've made the book smaller, and we will combine 3 books into one when it's done. So USNA 2, Book 1, was published last year. It's about 60 pages, and then USNA 2, Book 2, will be published in another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And the story does continue. I don't know if we're going to go past USNA 2, but we'll see. If the demand is there, we have more story in us.
Yeah, and so when you're creating this story, the three mm-hmm. of you, do you have discussions amongst yourselves in terms of what you depict? And by that I mean, whatever it is you write about deals with, say, how you'd like to see the world or the frustrations you have with the way things are today. I mean, I guess that factors into what you guys eventually write, right?
Yes, yes. I think that we kind of have in our minds overall what we would like to see in the future as a more idyllic situation politically. The rebels are an amalgam of First Nations and fishermen and farmers and politicians and what, you know, more of just regular people to us. There isn't just one, you know, real strong guy who's leading these ex-soldiers or anything like that. You know, it's more of a rebellion of the people. And what we envision and what we kind of work towards in the story is a more encompassing kind of people-oriented value system, you know, more democratic. In the USNA that we create, the power, all of the provinces and all of the states have dissolved, and there are now 5 regions that are governed by councils, and the councils are made up of politicians and military people and business people, and there's one overseeing council, which is in the Pentagon. And so in the future, what we're seeing is that that would disintegrate, and we would go back to a more democratic, where everybody felt like they had a voice. So that's kind of what we're working towards. But the society that exists in USNA is much more repressive and much more controlled.
Yeah, and I guess that speaks to, say, a fear that one might have in terms of where we, or what's possible, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. And I think fear is a big, it's a tool used by politicians to try to keep people under their thumb or to distract them from the real issues. You know, if people are afraid of ISIS and afraid of somebody coming in and, you know, I don't know, setting off a bomb in a railway station or an airport, mm-hmm. then they're distracted from some of the real issues that have to do more with, you know, how corporations are exploiting people or, you know, the economic issues, you know, all that, those kinds of things. So fear is a tool for the use of control of people.
Yeah, so you're going to Calgary shortly, Toronto, mm-hmm. and then you'll be in Vancouver a month from now. And then in the fall, I guess, there'll be events, Saskatoon, I believe.
Well, we're doing Saskatoon and Edmonton and then the Vancouver Fan Expo. We're doing a book signing at Chapters at Granville and
Broadway,
yeah. And that will be on, I should have that in front of me. I'll just have a quick look. It's in May. On the 20th.
May 20th.
Yeah. So we'll be there from 7 till 9, and all of the creative people will be there, including our artist, Francine Delgado, and our letterer, Chris Barrett.
Now, so when you go to these various events, I mean, you obviously meet your readers.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of who they are and what they're looking for, say, in the novel?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that we're very surprised that we thought that our novel would be interested. We thought that our readers would be the demographic of young men, say, from 18 to 30, 35, because it's about, there's action, there's battles, there's guns, along with all of the other drama that goes on, because this is really kind of the great Canadian adventure story.
Mm-hmm.
But we have found that there's a lot of females who have been interested in it and have told us that they really enjoyed it, and some younger kids, like, are, you know, mid-teenagers, and even some people who are in their 60s have come to us and said, wow, you know, we really liked it, and, you know, what's going on next? So the demographic is really quite a surprise to us in terms of who has enjoyed it and what they've said about it.
Yeah, and graphic novels, they have such prominence in the culture today. I mean, mm-hmm. they've reached some sort of zenith, haven't they?
They have, and I think that, like, we do these fan expos, and for your audience who don't know much about fan expos, there are these huge events. The one in Calgary that we're going to will have over 100,000 people there over 4 days. And what they do is that they bring in pop stars who are in TV shows like The Flash or The Arrow, and movie stars from Star Trek, Star Wars, and you can go and have your picture taken with them and get signed autographs and that kind of thing. They also have booths where people sell their Batman paraphernalia and all the collectibles and things like that. And they also have people who dress up as characters like Batman or Spider-Man or from anime and manga, that sort of thing. And then they have people like us who sell comics and graphic novels. So when we do these events, we meet literally thousands of people over these days and get to talk to them about our books and sell our books. So the fan expos are really excellent for meeting a lot of people in a short amount of time.
Yeah, and as you said, it's all the different demographics, and you know, they're making inroads in films and television.
Yeah.
And why do you think that is, that they have done as well as they have? I mean, is it because they're not comic books as they were, say, 50 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Well, the difference between a graphic novel and a comic book is that comic books are serialized, and you can buy one every 2 weeks or every month, and they're about 10 or 15 or 20 pages. And a graphic novel is called a graphic novel because it's a novel-length comic book. So you the first graphic novels were the amalgamation of comic book series. So let's say the series ran for a year, it was 10 or 15 pages, so they could combine it, and then all of a sudden you've got a 150-page or 200-page book for the continuous story. But it wasn't until Art Spiegelman did the graphic novel Mouse, which is M-A-U-S, and that was won a Pulitzer Prize, so that kind of put graphic novels out there where people started to pay attention to them, even more so than they had. And Hollywood is just looking for anything that they can produce. And people like graphic novels, I think, because, you know, these days there's a lot of different pressures and a lot of different fears. And graphic novels are kind of like a movie in a book. So it's easy to read and it can be entertaining. And there's a wide range of different stories. I have some Kafka in a graphic novel, and I've seen that they've even taken the Bible and made them into graphic novels. So we did a reading at the Jewish Book Festival here, not last year, but the year before, and a woman came up to us and thanked us for doing graphic novels because she was working with autistic kids, and she said that graphic novels were the only books that these kids wanted to look at, that they had too much difficulty with the words. So you just never know who this medium is going to be attracted to.
Yeah, and what struck me about USNA and other graphic novels that I've seen over the years is how sophisticated they are at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they touch these different audiences.
Well, yeah. There's a woman named Tava Harrison who just published a graphic novel. And her graphic novel is her taking the blog that she was doing about having terminal cancer, and then she turned it into a graphic novel. And so it's just, it can be very personal in terms of what your journey is in life, or it can just be a way of telling a story. There's a wide, like books, I guess there's a wide range of what you can do.
Yeah.
But when you're doing pictures and comic format, and that kind of expands it in some way where it's more visual. The difference, I think, is, you know, when you're reading a book with words, then you're using your own imagination to create the pictures in your mind of what the words represent. Where with a graphic novel, in the same way that when you go to see a movie, then the images are there for you, and you're led through the images by the director or by the artist in the graphic novel. So it's a different medium, but people seem to really like it.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Other than USNA and talking about it, as you will shortly, throughout the country, are you working on other projects at the same time?
Yeah, well, we have, I mentioned Caretakers, so it's, we've published the first of three books, and the second book will be out probably in another couple of months. And then we're doing a spin-off animation series of USNA. In USNA 2, we had a rebel who shot down a helicopter in Chicago, and he managed to leave the city by hiding in a portable toilet on a truck by a company called You're in Luck, which is U-R-I-N Luck.
Yeah.
So we're taking characters from this particular portable toilet company and creating an animated series out of that. So it'll probably start as a web comic and then expand from there. And we have other screenplays that we've been working on, mostly in the comedy realm. We actually, the Real Wright Brothers, enjoy doing comedy more than the drama. But USNA was just a story that was compelling, and there were a lot of people saying to us that turning it into a graphic novel would be a really good idea. And also because graphic novels are being produced by movie people, we thought that would be a way to get it into the market.
Yeah, you guys are doing fascinating work. I appreciate your time today, Alan. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Oh, well, thank you. Pleasure speaking to you, Joe.
USNA 2 is out now, and then you can get the first one, USNA. USNA 2 Book 2 will be out shortly as well. Visit usna.ca for more information. Alan Stanley joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.